A new tool has been released to aid with addiction recovery, the Multidimensional Inventory of Recovery Capital, or MIRC. HealthCall has added the MIRC to their collection of standardized and automated assessments. And today, Daniel Hayes, CEO of HealthCall, interviewed Elizabeth Bowen, PhD, Associate Professor at the University of Buffalo, and Principal Investigator on the team that created the MIRC. We hope this interview provides some insights into how the MIRC works and how it can help your organization.
Can you just give us a little background on how you, decided upon this and kind of how you got started with it?
So my background is I'm a social worker, and now I currently am a professor and do research full time. But I used to be a practicing social worker, working primarily with people that were homeless and people that were transitioning from homelessness into supportive housing programs. So that's my background. And when I was doing that work, I worked with a lot of people who were in recovery, but they were also people who had been homeless or who currently were homeless and had pretty limited resources, both socially and economically. And so I often heard from those clients that I worked with, they struggled a lot in their recovery and they really tended to blame themselves. So they had kind of gotten this message, I think, from treatment and just from society in general, that if you want to recover bad enough, you'll be able to do it. That's the message they were hearing, was that it was really just about willpower or motivation or wanting it enough. And so then when they struggled, they would blame themselves and say, why didn't I guess I didn't want it bad enough. And then they would feel ashamed. And then, it would kind of lead to a downward spiral. So I saw that pattern many times. And then later, when I went back to school and was getting my PhD and thinking about a research career, I came across this idea of recovery capital. And I really liked it because it kind of flipped that script of thinking about motivation and wanting it bad enough. It takes it away from that to looking more at what resources in somebody's life and in their environment are there to help them recover. And So recovery capital, I think, is a way of helping people look holistically at what resources they have. So it can be very strengths-based and help people realize that there are different things they have, both internally and externally, that can help them recover. And then it might also point to areas where a person is more challenged or more lacking in resources. And that's useful, too, I think, to realize that there are some places where people might need extra help. And recovery capital helps both individuals and I think helps service providers to see that, so then they can figure out what is the best way to support a person. So that's really how I came to this issue.
One of the things that I was impressed with is that you kind of took that positive aspect of recovery capital and carried it all the way through in your questions and categories and even in the scoring of how you pulled this together. And maybe can you just tell us a little bit about, the four quadrants, social, physical, cultural, and human, but how did you come up with those four quadrants? And then I really like how you phrase the questions to that a little bit, if you can.
Sure. Thanks for asking about that. So with those four categories, so social capital, human capital, physical capital, and cultural capital, we were really drawing from the original research and theory around recovery capital. And so that was developed, just a brief little bit of background on that. That was developed more than 20 years ago, so it's been around for a while. The researchers' names are Cloud and Granfield, William Cloud and Robert Granfield. So in any case, they are the people that came up with this research after doing lots of interviews with people in recovery and trying to understand what resources helped with people's recovery. So they did their qualitative research on that, and then came up with this theory of recovery capital, and they included those four categories. So that's why we stuck with that, because we thought that might be meaningful to look at recovery capital in each of those areas. Mm-hmm. And just to recap what the areas are, so social capital, this is people's social relationships, so friendships, family members, acquaintances, even just contacts, social contacts that are supportive of recovery in different ways.
And isn't that that's human, just so...
Yeah. Does that make sense?
Oh, absolutely. And it's just so important that the people that we associate with, right, to help us through that. So, yeah, it makes all the sense in the world. Uh-huh.
Yeah, absolutely. I think social capital in particular is really powerful for a lot of people.
Mm-hmm.
And then the other ones are physical capital. So that really refers to tangible or financial type resources. So this is where I would put things like a person's income, having stable housing, having transportation, having health insurance so that they can access different services more easily. I would put that all under physical. And then human capital, this is things that are, I think of this as things that are internal to a person. So this might have to do with attitudes, spirituality, I would put here, different kinds of knowledge or information that a person has or has access to that might help in their recovery. So sometimes education or having some kind of training or background that might be helpful in recovery comes into play here.
Sure, sure. Because if you don't know what you should do, you can develop like a type of learned helplessness, right? If you don't know where to go or what to do, no matter how hard you might want to recover, mm-hmm. you certainly need to know.
Sure, sure. And, you know, addiction is complex. Mm-hmm. And so having... You know, it doesn't have to necessarily be academic knowledge, but I think having different information about addiction, about kind of how the brain works and about those processes can give people insight that can help in recovery.
Sure.
And I would put that under this category of human capital. And then the last one, which is, I think, the broadest one, but one of the most interesting to me, is cultural capital. So this is more at a community or more macro level. So this has to do with, you know, where does a person live? Do they have good access to resources in their neighborhood? And resources might include access to treatment or 12-step groups, but it might also just be, you know, do you live in a community where there are fun things to do that don't involve drugs or alcohol? Or on the converse, are you in a community where every time you leave the house, you know, you're surrounded by cues that might, you know, make a person want to drink or want to use drugs.
Sure.
And this can also have to do with less kind of tangible things at a cultural level. So feeling like you're connected to a culture that supports recovery, that can be a 12-step culture, but it doesn't necessarily have to be. So just one example, I've read some interesting research about different indigenous communities and different parts of people's culture as a indigenous or native person that they felt connected to their recovery, even though it wasn't, this had nothing to do with, you know, treatment or 12 steps or anything like that, but just part of somebody's cultural identity that they felt when they tapped into that, it supported their recovery. So those are the types of things I put under cultural capital.
Yeah.
And then to just explain a little bit more. So our measure taps, or measures both positive and negative capital. So mostly we've been talking about positive capital. And so mm-hmm. that's this strengths-based side of things. So what resources does a person have in each of these four categories? But the original recovery capital theory, so by Cloud and Granfield, they also talked about negative capital. So recognizing the idea that in those four categories, you can have positives, but you can also have challenges. So one, I think of the easiest examples to think about this with is with social capital. So positive social capital is having good friendships and connections that support recovery, but a person can also have negative social capital. And so that might be, you know, friends or family members who don't really support or understand a person's recovery. They might even pressure a person to keep drinking or keep using substances. So that, of course, can be a detriment to recovery. So that's negative social capital. And so in each of those categories, we do ask about positives, but we also ask about negatives so that you get a total score that really holistically reflects both somebody's strengths and their challenges with recovery capital.
All right. So, so then the questions, were these questions that existed, or are these that you and your team reworked?
Yeah, I'm so glad you asked about that, because that's something that was really important to me in making this measure. So for the most part, these are not questions that we took from other sources. These are ones that our team came up with. But then, so the process we did was that our research team wrote an initial list of possible questions, and we did look at previous studies and other measures to kind of see what was out there, but we came up with our own list of original questions, and it was long. I think we started with, 90 or 100 questions or something like that. And we knew the measure would not, have that many, because that's way too long. It would take too long to fill out.
Sure.
But that was just our starting point. But then the part of this that was really important to me was that I thought the questions need to really reflect the experiences of a diverse range of people in recovery. So, the questions that me and my team come up with, that's not enough. We might have good questions from a research perspective, but that doesn't really mean anything if the questions don't make sense and don't feel relevant to the population we're trying to reach, which is people in recovery. So we did a pretty extensive process then with a group, or really we did multiple interviews and focus groups. I think it was about, I don't remember the numbers off the top of my head, but around 44, 45, we did people in recovery as well as some service providers, where we showed them those initial questions and we got their feedback on them. So we would present the questions and say, what do you think of this? Is this a good way to ask about this? Does this make sense? We explained what recovered capital was first, so they knew what we were trying to measure. And then we'd say, do you think this really measures that? Is this question getting at it? And people had incredible feedback, and we made a lot of changes based on that. So it was very humbling, because I think our team thought, oh, the questions we came up with are, pretty decent, good starting point, but we really revised them once we were getting feedback from people in recovery. And that was really, really the point of that.
Sometimes
we would just change the wording. Sometimes we would totally get rid of a question if people thought, that it wasn't important or wasn't a good way to ask it. There were things on there that we had not included at all, so we wrote some new questions based on the feedback. So we did a lot of really extensive revising, and I'm really, really proud of that, because I think that ultimately leads to a better measure and to something that's more meaningful.
Yeah, impressive.
Hey, thank you.
So can you walk through kind of an appropriate use case or two, for using this assessment? Can you just kind of walk us through, where it'd be an ideal fit and most appropriate type of thing?
That's a good question. What I envision with this tool is that it could be useful at many different time points in a person's recovery. So, mm-hmm. Let's say it is, a first responder is responding to somebody after an overdose or during an overdose crisis. Once that person is stable, it might be useful to use this tool, the MERC, as part of an assessment to see what the person's recovery goals are and to see what kind of help they need. And as I mentioned, even if a person is not, necessarily interested in being completely abstinent from a substance, I think it still can be relevant to talk about their recovery capital and talk about what supports they have and what supports they might need to help them support their goals, whatever those goals are. So I think having this tool as part of that initial conversation around somebody's recovery goals and recovery pathway could be really useful. And I think it also could be useful over time. So if it's someone maybe that has been in recovery, it is doing better, but maybe, maybe they're coming into contact with a first responder for another reason, not recovery related, but it comes up in conversation that they're in recovery. I still think it could be relevant as a kind of check-in of, let's see, sounds like you're doing well in your recovery, but let's fill this out and take a look at what resources you have and just see where you're at. And I really see it as a conversation starter, I think, more than anything. So, mm-hmm. It gives a chance for the person filling out the instrument to reflect on their own recovery capital, reflect on their strengths, as well as reflect on areas where they might be having challenges. And then that might be a good place for a conversation, to talk with a first responder about, oh, look, here's an area where you're doing well. Here's an area where maybe you could use some referrals or use some additional support. And let's see what we can do about it. So that's how I see it being used in general.
Well, what a pleasure. You have a great day, and we'll look forward to talking with you soon.
Okay, sounds good. Thank you, Daniel.
Thanks again to Elizabeth Bowen for sharing her insights, and thank you for listening. To learn more about HealthCall's new automated MIRC assessment, please visit healthcall.com.